Good morning. You're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network, produced by the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center. I'm Judith Brink. With us today is Joseph Rodriguez, who I first met, so to speak, when I saw a stunning photograph by him on the cover of the May 2004 issue of the Sun magazine. And then inside, I read his photo essay called Juvenile. His photos in Juvenile document the lives of incarcerated youths in California's juvenile justice system and follow them back into their communities. And I'll just start right off by giving him a shameless plug here. You can visit his website at www.josephrodriguez.com and see those photographs. So welcome to the program.
Good morning, Judith. Thank you so much. It's been a while. We've been trying to do this, so I'm happy to be here for you.
Well, I'm glad we're doing it too, and I really appreciate your hanging in there. Makes me feel good. I think you have some important things to say. So why don't you start by telling us how and why did you begin your career as a photojournalist?
Well, I think it goes way back to the day, I should say, because it's not redemption is a process. I was living on the streets. I was strung out on heroin, and when I was 17, 18, 19. And when I was 17, I got arrested and went to Rikers Island. When I was 18, went to Rikers Island again. And when I was 19, I was ready to go back to Rikers Island again. And then I realized, oh, I better do something to try to straighten out this problem. So I went on a methadone program here in Brooklyn, New York, and began to try to piece my life together. And one of those pieces actually was education, a very important piece. And it was the time of affirmative action, so there were availability, there were programs that were available to many of us throughout the city. And one of them that I was really interested in was photography. There was this photography workshop here at the Brooklyn Children's Museum up here in Bedford-Stuyvesant. So I was hungry to see what that was all about. Because, you know, as a child, I was really always interested in the movies because my childhood was kind of traumatic, so I was always looking to try to get out of the house. So I would spend as much time as I could in the cinema. So that visual sense was sort of being burned into my head. I didn't realize that when I was younger. So here I go, and I'm, you know, about 19, 20 years old, and I find this photo workshop, and I started taking it, and it just gave me something else. What it gave me was this sense of finding something that was uniquely mine, my voice. You know, and all I photographed was buildings and trees and things of that nature, but I was excited to come home, develop the films. I created a dark room, I created a studio, and I had friends come over. And so that process, that finding photography actually began the shift in my head from going from a negative to a positive, meaning that I started to see that there was something more interesting than just getting high, and started by slowly getting myself off of methadone, which did work. It took me about another 5 years to do that. By the time I was 26, I was clean and out of City University of New York, where I studied graphic arts technology. I just took it a step further. And went into advertising, and didn't like that life, and then wound up changing careers at the age of 34, and went to the International Center of Photography, where I took some workshops, and started working there, cleaning up in the darkrooms and stuff, and and they gave me a scholarship, and that's how it all started. And that's 85, and then worked on the first project of documenting my community up in Spanish Harlem, which turned into a cover story for the National Geographic, which is May 1990. There's a cover story called Growing Up in East Harlem.
And wow, so that's a big way to break in.
Yeah, no, it was a very big way to break in. I mean, there were a lot of people that helped. There was one person, Howard Chapnick, who really helped me a lot, and he was the president of Black Star Photo Agency, which is where I went to work right after school. So there were some very important people who helped me along the way. And it was with the camera I started to realize that I could begin to speak about issues that revolved around my life and many people that are that I am familiar with, and very much interested in social injustice. So that was the beginning of my path.
Wow. I was just wondering if you talked about how that was the beginning of not getting high, but I'm wondering if it didn't just replace, you started getting high off of what you were doing instead of high off of a drug. Do you think that's an accurate thing to say?
Oh, I think that's very accurate. Yeah. I think it's very accurate. I mean, I am completely addicted to photography. There's no doubt about it. It is my life. I live with it 7 days a week, 24/7. You know, so, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, the essay that I saw in the Sun magazine was photographed in California, and you live in Brooklyn. Why did you go to California?
Well, what happened was in 1992, I began a project in Los Angeles, and the project was turned into a book, which is called East Side Stories, Gang Life in East L.A. So prior to 92, I had met with a very unique woman who, by the name of Sandy Close, who is the executive director of the Pacific News Service, and they are in San Francisco. And we collaborated on a number of stories prior to beginning the gang project. So that became a sort of a friendship, a collaboration, a working relationship with that organization. So, and I immediately fell in love with California for a number of reasons. One, because of just the nature of the people and the state, but also because it's the most important state in the union, the most populous, the most economically rich, the most ethnically diverse. When California came out with the three strikes law, many states followed.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people in the country, a lot of states watch California as sort of, you know, the trendsetter for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it'd be important to talk about that state. And I've been working there since 92, and to go back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So you've had a lot of interactions both in your own life, in your neighborhood, and as a photographer with young people who either have been in prison or are in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea of what is the bottom, what is the underlying issue here, and what can we as a society do to change? This is a big question. How can we change the incarceration rate in this country?
Well, I think it's multifaceted. It's very complex at this point because you're dealing with generations and generations of poverty, and generations of drug addiction in many cases, and deterioration of the family. I think what it needs, what could be helpful, is to go back to that old African proverb: "It takes a village to be able to raise a child." And I mean, if we would go back in history, just even in inner cities in New York or wherever, back in the olden days when we had all of these European immigrants here, you know, people kept a closer eye on people in a way, on the children, and neighborhoods were tighter and. And then, you know, of course, it's the support of the family. The family is extremely important. But, you know, it's very complex at this point because it would take a lot of money.
Yeah.
It really would. That's what's needed.
Yeah.
To be quite honest. I mean, it stems from one simple thing. I mean, not simple, but But one of the areas which I think can really begins to make a difference would be child care around the country. So if you give a mother for example, my mom, we were on welfare. My stepfather was in and out of prison from every state prison in New York when I was a kid growing up. So we had to go on welfare for a period of our lives. But one thing that was going on here, I think it was Mayor Beam at the time, proposed that people that are on welfare that could work should go to work or go to school. And they had this wonderful program here at CUNY where my mom was actually mandated to go to school. So she went back, she went to university and studied child care development and went on to work for the Board of Education for the past 20-something years. She's actually 81 years old next week, and she's still working for the Board of Ed right now. And wow. She works as a paraprofessional where she speaks two languages and she helps the teacher sort of communicate with the children.
That's a wonderful story.
That kind of program actually, created so many success stories. But if you're able to give mothers that opportunity, not just say to them, okay, you need to, all right, for your welfare check, you're going to have to come and clean up the streets of New York, which is what people do. You see them every day. I think that's a good idea to keep people busy, but, I mean, you want to change things? I mean, education is very important. And then child care. So, it all starts from the child. I mean, if we go into the statistics and we see that over 70% of the kids are the prisoners that are in the prisons in the United States have been through the foster care system, hello, doesn't that say something?
Mm-hmm.
There's this feeling on the street that, we have this institutional racism where they're black and brown, so that's just part of the cause. It's part of society. That's just the way it is. You're never going to change anybody. So, and then you have a prison industrial complex where now you tend to have all of these people working around people being locked up. In California, for example, they have the strongest Correctional Officers Association union than any other state in the union. Mm. And so you can't just say you're going to close down prisons like that. I mean, there's a huge lobby in Sacramento, California.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with Schwarzenegger, and the reason why I mentioned California for your listeners is the fact that California has more prisons per capita than any other country in the world. So, Schwarzenegger realizes that we cannot afford to keep all these prisons open. I mean, during the early 90s, it was all about building prisons, and now they realize that, with 650,000 people coming out of prison every year, what are we going to do with all these people? Mm. Where are they going? So they're trying to reassess and look at all kinds of things, from parole to drug addiction to all. So, and I think this issue is affecting many states throughout the union right now.
Well, so you sort of ended on a positive note there, thinking that California may institute some positive changes in their criminal justice system. And
well, I don't think it's because people want to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's sheer economics.
Yeah.
It's all it is. I mean, states throughout the country are really having a very bad time, and so what do we get out of this?
Yeah.
Keeping everybody locked up. I mean, we have to assess the prisoners. Are they addicted? And if so, do they need help? And then, would this help us more in the long run than just keep locking them up and making these super criminals?
Yes, and putting the money into child care, for instance, and
right.
helping the communities that
right.
need it. Yeah. I think we're going to have to move on. Let me just tell our listeners again that this is WRPI Troy, and they're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network. And our guest is Joseph Rodriguez, a photojournalist who's been in prison in his youth and turned his life around through education and getting involved in being a photographer. So We first started talking, as you mentioned in the beginning, about doing this program months ago. And at that time, you were about to photograph for a story in the Children's Beat magazine about reentry.
That's correct.
Tell us how that turned out.
Well, it's a cover story. It's for the fall issue right now. I have one right in front of me right now. It's called Home for Good. And the headline reads, nearly 650,000 adult and 100,000 juvenile offenders return to their families and communities each year. With four drug felony convictions behind her, Linda Soberall is trying to build a new life with her children, which she has five children. And so it opens with the beautiful cover of Linda with her two daughters, embracing her two daughters. And so for 17 years, she has not had custody of her five children. They've been with their aunt and they've been with their grandmother. So she's actually been able to visit, but this is the very first time she's been able to. She's been clean for over 2 years now. She had an addiction problem, and she's been out of prison for several years now, but just trying to deal with her own life and trying to get it together. And now she feels better, and she's been through therapy, and she's been through a lot of things with the kids, and she's in court now just trying. She was in family court last week just trying to get all of that together. And I was just with her at a time where she was transitioning. So she got a new apartment. You see her in her new place. And the kids are, you know, this transition from leaving the grandmother to going home with her. And it's just a wonderful story. It really is. It's just an absolute wonderful story. And hopefully this story will turn into more of a book project later on down the road where we can tell more stories like this.
And this, she's from New York.
She's from New York. That's correct.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about what the Children's Beat magazine is.
Well, the Children's Beat is a journal for of media coverage. It really is it has a very specific niche, and is put out so journalists throughout the United States can be educated on how to be able to cover some of these stories. And it's a magazine that helps promote the importance of covering issues of social injustice, whether it's poverty or criminal injustice or whatever. But and they've been around for a long time. They are sponsored by the Casey Journalism Center on Children and Families. And if people are interested, the website is www.cjc.umd.edu, and they come out of the University of Maryland. So Patrice Pasquale, who's the executive director, and Beth Freakin is the executive director, and Patrice Pasquale is the deputy director and editor of the Children's Beat. They were kind enough to do a story on juvenile, and because they're very much interested in juvenile justice, and now very much committed to reentry. So we have talked about collaborating on future stories with this magazine.
And do I understand these stories that appear in this magazine are to give journalists a taste of a story that's out there that they then might want to follow up on their own?
Absolutely, because there's not enough. There's not enough coverage. For example, criminal justice.
Yeah.
You don't have papers, newspapers around the country that are very much interested in it. So what we try, to do at Children's Beat is to just try to bring the stories to light, as it were, and to talk about the importance of covering the story.
Okay, we only have a few more minutes, and I want to hear about what's on your table for the future. And and you did mention in our conversation on the phone the other day something about how you've seen Hurricane Katrina's impact on crime, which is an interesting connection for us to cover on this program.
Absolutely. I think there's a concern within the foundation world anyways and the think tanks that, you know, with this mass migration throughout the country, them could be a problem with crime, not just in New Orleans with that whole situation with looting and all that, but we're talking about you have a mass of poor people that are now sort of disseminated around the country. I know there's one town where there are hundreds and hundreds of families that are now in an area that's poor to begin with, who now have to compete with people that have already been living there who are also poor, and so there's this tension that's starting to happen. Then you've got a lot of young people that are not in school, that aren't working, that are hanging out, and that is a very sort of dangerous thing for a lot of young people to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and because people are poor, people are worried that people might get into more crime, whether that's dealing drugs and that kind of thing. So that's sort of what we're concerned about on the ground, amongst other things, of course. But that's just one aspect of displacement and what's going on. On the positive note, there are some people, but there's one program in Texas that is a reentry program that has embraced hundreds and hundreds of families. And so you have ex-prisoners sort of helping families from New Orleans, which I think would be an interesting...
Yes.
And I think that what I'm interested in looking at now is to document the displaced throughout America. I mean, this is almost like... not since the old Depression has people sort of been... have to make this mass migration throughout the country. You know, back in the 30s, we had a program called the Farm Security Administration, and it was run by the government to document what the problems were on the ground. And a lot of people left the Dust Bowl to be able, because their farms were wiped out, to go west, where there would be more of a golden opportunity for them. And so I think this could turn into something, you know, if we find the right funding and funders out there. Any funders out there, we'd love you want to donate money to make this very important document of what's going on the ground. It's just unbelievable. The stories go beyond what you see on CNN right now.
Wow. It does sound like a very interesting story, and one that we need to see. So I wish you a lot of success in getting that project off the ground. I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you for being on the program.
Okay.
Any last minute things anything that I left out about how to contact you or anything that you'd like to say?
No, I just, people through my website, people can find my email address, and if there are any other nonprofits or organizations that are interested in this issue of Katrina, we would love to hear from you to see how there might be some way of collaborating. So,
very good. Thank you again.
Thank you, Judith.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.